it doesn't take any sophistication to turn the dial up to 11 on security. And it's safe, right? You're not going to get like if there is a breach and you say, look, everything I had was configured all the way up and it still didn't work, boy, it's not my fault. You know, that like that feels like a defensible position, and people will want to be in that. I think it's very sophisticated, and a very mature security leader or security engineer or analyst who can say, we only need to turn the dial up to 4 on this and 3 on this and 7 on this. And I'm comfortable with those decisions. And I'm comfortable taking that 7 down to a 6 if it means the business is going to be able to go a little faster. Yes, we're going to run a little hotter on the risk, but I can explain.
Welcome to the Cyber Ranch Podcast, recorded under the big blue skies of Texas, where one CISO explores the cybersecurity landscape with the help of friends and experts. Here's your host, Alan Alford, President and CISO at Alan Alford Consulting.
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Cyber Ranch Podcast. That is Drew Simonis, CISO at Juniper Networks, former CSO at the Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, former CISO at Willis. You get the idea. Big shot CISO guy. Drew's posts on LinkedIn are pure fire, not in the hot takes way, but because of the quality of thinking behind them. I love following Drew's stuff on LinkedIn. If you do not follow Drew on LinkedIn, follow Drew on LinkedIn. He's been on the show before. I'm being silly about our intro because Drew is a repeat visitor to the Cyber Ranch. I think this is your third appearance now on the show.
It sure is, and thank you for having me. I really enjoy each time that I'm able to visit with you.
Well, I love having you come out because I love the conversations. I love hearing your thoughts on the various cybers because you've got good thoughts on the cybers.
Oh, thank you. As do you.
I try. I'll leave it at that. I'm over here trying. So today's topic, Drew and I were chatting this afternoon, and we were talking about those times that cybersecurity took a back seat, and it was actually the right thing. It was a good thing. The times that cybersecurity mattered less than other things, and it being a good thing. And we thought, you know what, we could just get on the mic and share some stories and tell some times about when that occurred and why it occurred and why it was actually a good thing. So I asked Drew to jump on the mic, and here we are. And I'll kick us off if you don't mind, Drew. I've got a story I can tell.
Please do.
All right. VP of R&D had been told that there's a whole new product they got to get out the door. Like product management figured out there was a gap and there was this whole new thing they had to roll out, right? And there's a wee bit, if you will, of pre-planning for this, right? They had headcount allocated and figured out some other things. But after they got started with it, the VP of R&D realized there's going to be way more cloud costs than we had anticipated. And he was going to be going and asking for some out-of-bandwidth budget. And at the time, I had an out-of-bandwidth project as well. I don't even remember what the heck mine was now. But we were both going to be asking for out-of-band budget. And we recognized only one of us is going to get it. You don't get out-of-band budget twice. You're lucky to get it once. And so I basically forgoed. What is the past tense of that word? I gave up.
I don't know, but it's not forgotten.
Forgotten. I gave up my project. And backed him and said, take the excess funds that, you know, we were going to be putting on my stuff and put it on his stuff instead. It's cloud cost. It's cloud coverage. However, I did fit in a little bit of win-win there in that I told him, if you're going to be investing deeper in your cloud, obviously more storage, more compute, more all the things that a new product entails, I said, you're also going to pay for some of the security features you haven't historically paid for, and you're going to include that in your budget. You're going to secure and uplift all of your cloud stuff. So that was kind of a win-win. So that's one example where I just was like, you know what? Right now, R&D needs the budget more than I need it, full stop. And if I can get a little security out of being an ally and helping the VP of R&D, why not? What's your take on that one?
It's a great example. And I think within that is the moral of the story is if you want to help people, you'll be a lot more successful than if you want to demand things from them. You know, like what you did in that situation and what I've seen very successful in my own career is, reach out a helping hand instead of, striking out with a ruler across the knuckles. And if you find people who have sort of overlooked security, as we often see them do, you know, build a partnership with them towards that solution. You know, I've done similar things in my own career where we found projects that under delivered on security capabilities, and we said, you know what, for the first year, we'll pay to get you whole. And then we'll give you the time and the runway to sort of do it the right way. Next year, you'll put it in your own budget as you kind of did with them. And yeah, it's just like I think to the fundamental point, it makes our life a little harder in a sense, but in the longer term, it's an investment in the relationship. It's an investment in collaboration. And I think it's one that really pays off.
Yeah, there's a strategy there that you're describing, and sort of a planned budget, as opposed to my story was about excess budget possibly being garnered, right? Yours was more of a strategic and planned budget story. But to your point, there's also this this just helping out, right? Regardless of ownership, I don't have to be the one getting the credit. As long as the security is happening, I'm happy. And I think a lot of folks forget that. They associate the territory with the mission, and it's entirely entirely possible to achieve mission without owning the doing, right? Which is what you would describe in your story.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people are as new leaders, as leaders looking for their proverbial seat at the table, or trying to gain access to more senior audiences, they really are convinced that they need credit. Like they need to build a portfolio of successes that are attributable to them. And I think that's a naive perspective, because the reality is, I don't remember who said this quote. I should look it up because I love the quote so much, but it's like, you'd be amazed at what you can get done if you don't care who gets the credit. And if you behave that way, it's frustrating in the near term when people are giving credit to someone else and you're sort of sitting there, like the first couple of times you do it, it's going to itch a little bit and you're going to say, I wish they knew that I had a big part to play in that. But the more you do that, the more you'll be associated with those successes, and people will start to notice, like, he's the Forrest Gump or she's the Forrest Gump around here. Like everywhere we look, there that person is. And I wonder, like, they'll start watching what you're doing and they'll start seeing not only the contributions you make, but the impact that you have and the selflessness through which you do them. You know, that you'll be seen as a team player, not as a credit taker. And when you are seen as a team player, you're going to get invited to a lot more games.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, there's even a win there. Even if you want to maintain the selfish, I need some kind of credit perspective, fine. Take the credit for being a team player. Take the credit for being a good teammate. Take the credit for a relationship building, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're ultimately getting that kind of credit even if you're not looking to get the credit. So it's kind of a win-win, right?
It is. And it's the kind of win that really you can build off of. You know, it's not an empty calories sort of, I had a cookie and I feel real good about things, which getting credit in the short term is, you know, you feel good for the moment, but then you go back to the struggle. It's the kind of thing that is building your leadership credentials and your ability to influence. Cause like one of the other things we talked about is that this authority is a zero sum game. I think in the corporate context, you know, there is a decider. And for you to have authority, for you to get your seat at the table, someone else has to give that up. Like they've got to give you a little bit of their authority. And, you know, it starts out with this, we're collaborative, which really means I'll listen to you and I'll take your advice, but I'm not necessarily going to let you make decisions. You know, like this is your training wheels period of your time. And the better collaborator you are, the better you show that you are, you know, bringing that big picture of supporting the business's goals, not your own goals. Then you get to be delegated some authority and you build the trust, you build the relationship, and then people will actually let you start to do things And you can start influencing culture, which is really the most critical part of our jobs.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the alternative is what? Like you said, the ruler across the hands, the bludgeoning, the bullying, the badgering. Even mm-hmm. if you're right and you're fighting for the right thing and you won the fight and the right thing happened, just like you said it was going to happen, people still don't feel good around you.
No. No, you beat them. You didn't yeah. win together.
Right, right. And nobody likes getting beaten. That's it. That's it. Nobody likes to lose. So
right.
here's
especially,
one for you.
Especially these leaders.
Here's one for you. Join forces with the head of pro services. This was one that benefited me not at all in terms of like immediate impact to department or even security mission for the company. This was somebody in pro services who had been getting asked about security stuff in the field and realized if he worked with my organization, could put together a portfolio of more security-oriented service offerings, generate more income for the business as a result, bag some contracts he previously couldn't bag, et cetera, and all he needed was my department to give him a boatload of upfront training and guidance and run him through boot camps and do all this stuff. And we did it. We absolutely did it. We squeezed him in. We found ways to feed this guy and build up his team. His staff was, I don't know, 20 or 30 people rotated through our department and learned from us and gathered all these nuggets of wisdom. And he was able to strategically put together some security packages for pro services. It all worked out. Pro services budget went up. It was directly attributable to the new security offerings that they had. It was, you know, like you could point to the chart where like, look, we started offering this and now we jumped up this high. So it was a clear win for the bottom line of the company, for the top line of the company, and it gained me, quote-unquote, nothing. But I'll tell you what, I had a pro services team that was absolutely loyal and were my biggest security champions going forward.
Well, and they knew a lot more about what security was, how it was done, and why it was important. You know, even if only that, huge win for you and the company. I was in a similar situation where almost like for like partnered with a services organization that really wanted to learn about building a cyber program, knew nothing about operations in the cyber context, knew a lot about technology operations, but didn't know a lot about how that applied to cyber. And you know, the leader in that organization that I collaborated with, you know, I still talk to these to this day, because the bond, the trustworthy relationship, and the just the acknowledgement that we're on the same team, we're pulling for the same goals, and I think, you know, too many business leaders don't see that cyber leaders are in that place, that for whatever reason, whatever we've done, we've created a them and an us. And I think a lot of cyber leaders feel like others have created that. And I'm always not sure if it's we ourselves who are creating that by the way we talk about the business. You know, one of the fundamental issues to what you're talking about is prioritizing the right risk and making sure that the resources of the company are applied to manage that risk. When we see that happening in the cyber landscape, we're like happy people, and hey, we're realizing a security issue and we're fixing it. When we have to make that same compromise, because let's face it, if some organization is prioritizing a cyber issue, they're deprioritizing a feature or a new product or some new initiative. And if we're never willing to make that same compromise, then we're never going to be seen as a partner. We're going to be seen as greedy. And somebody else said, you know, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. And we have to know the balance between those two and how we behave.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. And it, you know, it's part of it is, and I'll be, you know, totally like this is my deepest philosophy in this realm, if you will. To get obsessed with risk, to say that we are risk professionals, is to still complete half the puzzle. And what I mean by that is risk is inherently a negative proposition. We need to spend resources in order to prevent a negative. Just as often, you want to spend resources to secure a positive. And yes, as soon as you think about that other 50% of the table, you know, cyber is automatically at best 50% important.
Yeah. And we also, there's this wonderful thing called prospect theory that talks about how people make decisions when facing a risk. And I won't go into too much detail. Anyone who's interested can read Thinking Fast and Slow, where they talk about that, the book by Daniel Kahneman, which is like a Bible in some ways. But I'll butcher the example, so I won't go into too much, but essentially, when faced with a gain, people love risk. I mean, that's why people go to casinos. When faced with a loss, people are a little bit more risk averse. But like, we understand that, but we don't understand that risk gain versus risk loss side, because we see the cyber event as the loss, and we think everyone rationally should want to avoid this loss. But they're in the other frame of mind. The business leaders and people rolling out new products and entrepreneurs, they see a potential gain within their reach. And when they see that gain, they're going to take the risk. That's like, we understand that, but they see us as the loss. We're the loss on the table. And not that the cyber event is the loss, but if I got $1 million, I can take that $1 million and try to secure some market and grow the business. That's a win. Or I can give that $1 million to the cyber person to prevent something that might happen in the future. I don't know for sure if it will. That's a guaranteed loss. I don't want to run that loss.
No, that's exactly it. And you know,
we think we're preventing it, but we are it.
Yeah, we are it. That's exactly it. And you know, the other piece of this puzzle, the thing that never gets said, the unspoken rule behind all business, as much as we like to think we're rational, as much as we like to think, oh, we're looking at cost benefit analysis, we're looking at ROI calculations, we're looking at risk loss exceedance curves, however measure-y you want to measure both that positive and negative story, both that gain and that loss. The reality is the new CEO walks into the room. Four people are sitting across the table from the new CEO. And she says to the first one, who are you? What are you? I'm important. She says to the second person, who are you? What are you? I'm important. And the third person says, I'm important. And the fourth one points to the third one and says, he's important. Guess who gets the cookie? Person number three, for whom someone else stood up and said, no, that mission is important, right?
Nice,
like there's a certain amount of just, to your point, it's all back to this team play thing. If you are the one others point to as, no, this guy's mission is important. This is the person to invest in. This CISO over here, she's the one who's got her act together. She's the one that we want to ally with and team with. If you can generate that sort of stir amongst your peers, whoever the new leader is going to automatically go with the personality equation and the team equation, not even necessarily the risk, loss, or gain equation. You know what I'm saying?
And now for a brief word from our sponsor. Alford & Adams Consulting offers strategic and transformative cybersecurity consulting, fractional CISO, and vCISO services. We offer assessments, plans, programs, and anything else you might need to be successful in your cybersecurity journey. We can even help you find good cyber insurers and good partners to help manage the day-to-day. Find out more at alfordandadams.com. That's alfordandadams.com. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. And I think to your opening comments, the challenge is to put yourself in that position. Like that takes strategic decision making and sacrifice. And I think that's where a lot of security leaders are terrified. Maybe some I talk to anyway are, which is like anybody. It doesn't take any sophistication to turn the dial up to 11 on security. And it's safe, right? You're not going to get fired. Like if there is a breach and you say, look, everything I had was configured all the way up and it still didn't work, boy, it's not my fault. You know, that like that feels like a defensible position and people will want to be in that. I think it's very sophisticated and a very mature security leader or security engineer or analyst who can say, we only need to turn the dial up to 4 on this and 3 on this and 7 on this. And I'm comfortable with those decisions And I'm comfortable taking that 7 down to a 6 if it means the business is going to be able to go a little faster. Yes, we're going to run a little hotter on the risk, but I can explain the rationale to that. Like, all that decision making and calculus puts, I mean, it's like a target on your back, and it feels like terrifying. And I think that's what stops us from doing as you've outlined, and saying, you know what, we will make the smart compromises to support the business, because those compromises feel to us like I will jeopardize my career for someone else's benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's, you put on your big girl pants, you put on your big boy pants, you take the C title. There is a certain amount of, I have therefore, you know, put my career on the line. You know, that is the cost of my decision making. There's a price to authority, and that price is accountability. And if you're a C-suite of any sort, I don't care, CMO, CRO, CFO, CISO, CIO, whatever, I don't care. If you're a C-suite and you're not comfortable with the fact that you may get fired over a decision you make or don't make, then you shouldn't be sitting at the table. Full stop.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that willingness really even soaks down deeper. Somebody said you shouldn't even be a project manager if you're not willing to quit your job over, sort of the kind of decisions and considerations that they have to make too. You know, at some point you have to decide what's important and stand up for it. And that's where we get it wrong. Like, we think what's important is the cyber deal. And it is. Like, I've gone out and I've said this in public too. Like, there are some companies where it is really, really critical. And then there's a lot of companies where it is less so. Not that it's not important at all. It's just not everyone is Microsoft. Not everyone is Google.
It ain't all that.
That's right. You know, there are millions of companies, literally millions of companies out there. There are probably thousands of those companies where it really is consequential. And there are a lot more where you have more mundane security challenges, like things we understand very well and not the same kind of threat exposure. And those leaders have to not act like they're at Microsoft. It was horrible. Like, nobody wants to hear that. You know, nobody wants to hear that.
But Timmy, we sell books for a living.
yeah. I mean, there's just different strata.
Yeah, there are. Absolutely, there are. And don't be Timmy. Don't be Billy. Be a good CISO. Yeah. So how about this one? And this one's a lot more subtle. I was at a startup, and we had a transition out of marketing leadership. And we had a choice at the moment. Somebody's got to manage marketing while we're on the hunt for a new marketing replacement, right? And the choices basically boil down to the C-suite, including the CEO. And we looked at everybody's workload, and we looked at who was doing what. And we realized, I've actually got, weirdly, the cycles to manage this better than the CEO does and better than the CRO does. And so we ended up punting marketing over to the CISO. Like, counterintuitive on the surface,
but was truly about me.
Yeah, it was truly about me stepping up and taking some ownership and assisting the business in a way when my assistance was the best offer on the table at the time. Right, the CEO just didn't have the cycles to do it, and it would have been more damaging to the business and distracting, you know, of the CEO's time versus distracting of my time. Now, what did that mean? It meant some of the security projects kind of got slowed down, right? There's no way you can manage two complete departments, especially that alien to one another, without offsetting some of the work you already had planned and slowing down some of the activities and having a little less focus on the security team by the CISO. But the company as a whole needed that focus. And I was the one best suited at the time to give it that focus. And so we did it. And I ended up running, you know, I was basically effectively the CMO for a period of 5 months. That's a weird example, but it's another example of this same kind of thing. Security ended up getting throttled back. Marketing got throttled up. And the business chugged forward. And we ended up achieving some really good marketing wins during that time period, too. Even though it was a short 5 months, we actually did some significant stuff. And I got to learn an awful lot about marketing. That was kind of cool, too. But there's another example.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful example in that it shows it's well, fundamentally, it shows how a relationship can lead to different things, and those different things can help you grow. Right, the company had to trust that you were an able general manager, and be willing to give you responsibility for something outside of your expertise. And that's another area that CISOs struggle with. You know, a lot of people see the CISO as a dead end function because, career is so over. Because a lot of people, what's next? What's next? And for many people, the only thing they can think of is go be a CISO again somewhere else, or go be a consultant and sort of be a VCISO or whatever, you know, form that takes. But I heard a great story. I think it was John Deere, the agricultural equipment manufacturer. And according to the story, this was 20 years ago, so I don't know, 15 years ago. But they went to their CISO and they said, we really like you. We think you're a pretty special leader, and we'd like you to be a John Deere guy for a long time, but it won't be as the CISO. We rotate our leaders so that they understand the whole of the business. And so if you want to be a CISO for the next 10 years, that's wonderful. You have to do that somewhere else. If you want to be a leader at John Deere, then, you know, strap on, ready to go. And I kind of wish more companies had that mindset and gave people the opportunity that you were given, because like you said, you learned so much about the business. The business learned so much about you. And what a wonderful outcome.
Yeah. And it was a learning experience, and I'm a better CISO because of it. At the end of the day, I couldn't have told you the difference between demand gen and lead gen. I couldn't have told you the difference between an MQL and an SQL. I didn't even know what an MQL and an SQL were. I know these things now. So now when I'm sitting around the table, and the CRO and the CMO are there, and we're having mutual conversations, and somebody rattles off some of these marketing terms, I actually know what they're talking about. And not only do I know what they're talking about, I can look at my own jurisdiction and say, oh, here's a way I can actually support that.
Yeah. Well, and as so many companies look to digitize their product offerings and do things like build trust centers or build certification portfolios around those digitized product offerings, you know, having a CISO who can actually say credibly, this is where security can make a difference in how your marketing unfolds or how your product is positioned. That you know, being part of the sales cycle is for many companies. I know it's not a core mission of security, or it's not seen as one. But I think this is another area where maybe security has played its role and is ready to evolve. You know, the analogy I always use is caterpillar. Caterpillar is wonderful at eating leaves or grass, is optimized for it, but it sucks at flying. And so you want to be a butterfly, but to get to the stage of being a butterfly, you've got to go through that very uncomfortable chrysalis. And you know, that's, I think we are avoiding going into the chrysalis as an industry. We're stuck in our apply controls, deploy technology. We say it's not an IT deal, but we act like it's entirely an IT deal. And we were reluctant to do the kind of rotations that you were offered to really put security in the context of overall business risk and realize where it really sits in that. And I think because of that, we then struggle to make business a competitive enabler for the company in the context of
full agreement.
Digitization, yeah.
Full agreement. I mean, I've, you know, in my career, I have run pro services. I have run SE teams, sales engineer teams. I have run just generic IT, CIO type stuff. I have run marketing. And I have been heavily involved in marketing and sales, both as a CISO at a security company. And that's one piece of advice I have. Anytime a CISO comes to me and says, how can I learn the marketing and sales worlds better? I say, it's your next job, become the CISO at a cybersecurity company. Mm-hmm. Whether you want to or not, you will be dragged into just about every marketing and sales
every customer event.
You know, and you will rapidly learn marketing and sales as the CISO at a cybersecurity company, because you're the subject matter expert, and everybody in marketing and sales would love to have you there. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's a wonderful you know, I think about myself as a buyer, and I think about myself as a technology vendor, Juniper Networks, we sell technology. And on one hand, I would say to people, hey, security is really critical. Our customers are going to demand it. But then if I think about the buying motions that I've seen all companies I've worked for be a part of, it's always like, get the deal done. Security is important, but the deal is more important. As a customer, right? Like, we need this tool or this service to help the business grow. And I think the buyers are willing to make compromises and trade-offs until the security team gets involved. And that's, it's another area where
we can't purchase this.
Yeah, right. Like, sure, this tool will bring in $20 million in revenue or support the development of a product offering that will. But, you know, there could be some security risk associated with that. So, nope, never mind. And in that procurement motion, you know, that's where the last of the Dr. No, I think, lives. And it's why we're kept out of it. You know, don't be surprised. If you're working for somewhere and you routinely find out about deals when they're late in their evolution or even after they're done, that's on purpose. That's a canary in the coal mine that you are not supporting the business. You are not seen as willing to make those trade-offs, and you're getting locked out of important conversations as a consequence.
Yeah, exactly. That's putting the brakes on a train that you cannot stop. You know, stand that's in exactly front of the train, right, and try to block it, and you're just going to be a smear on the rails, right? I mean, the business is going to keep bowling forward with or without you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, or the worst, right? If you are able to stop it, I think, as we were talking about earlier, if you are actually, like, you put your foot down, you have enough of a case that says we just absolutely can't do this, you might win that argument, but you've beaten the business. You haven't collaboratively won together.
Right.
And nobody
likes to be beaten.
Nobody wants to be beaten. Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly it. That is exactly it. Well, Drew, this is once again a fantastic conversation. We are at the 30-minute mark. So I'm going to say we are done with this one for now. But as always, your insights are appreciated. As always, your perspectives are appreciated. I know my listeners enjoy the shows you are on as well. So thank you so much for coming back to the ranch.
Always happy to do it, and I enjoy each time I'm visiting.
I love it. Thank you, and thank you, listeners. Y'all be good now.